right, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, excellent. So we are on the Anti-Deep State Party automatic recording blog podcast line. Hey, I have some people at my house right now.
Yeah.
That just literally just showed up here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let my phone sit here, and you just talk into it, and it gives you an hour, but I'm sure I'll be back.
I don't know that I need a whole hour, but you don't have any questions for me?
You know, I do have a bunch of questions, but I literally got to take care of something like at the moment.
Why don't you take care of it for about 10 or 15 minutes and swing back by? How about that?
Okay.
This will hang up in 20 minutes, so... it's only going to be a 20-minute recording, and when it hangs up, I can call you back, and then maybe you'll have time for questions. How's that sound?
That sounds perfect. So, yeah, start.
All right, I'll give people an update.
Absolutely. That's perfect. Awesome.
All right. Well, for your listeners, I am still incarcerated unlawfully and illegally, though as of the 24th, we did a notice of removal to the District Court of the District of Columbia and enjoined the current criminal cases as well as the civil case, which the civil case is case number 20-760 with the Supreme Court of Ohio. And people can get on, that is a public website, and they can download those PDFs themselves. The habeas case, which was filed after they came after me, basically to try to kill me, murder me, without a warrant in a no-knock raid, and shot me, permanently damaging my wrist, shot me through and through with hollow point bullets. They actually had bullets that were wall-penetrating bullets that penetrated several walls. Again, there was a standoff for about 7 hours where they used military-grade equipment. They had a total of, we now have enjoined 64 sheriff's department agents, including the sheriff himself, who's enjoined in the case in the criminal side. But we filed a habeas, and that case is with the Ohio Supreme Court, and that's case number 20-1017, and that's with the Ohio Supreme Court. Again, those dockets are public. People can go read what has been done. I just got off the phone with someone who's doing some liaison work for me in trying to get through to some people in the federal level. Being that we are having obstructions of justice, we are having obstructions with the United States Postmaster, not properly delivering documents to agents such as the IRS, who is aware of the Treasury default that I hold on the United States Treasury in case number 2020-40 with the shared clerkship of the District Court of the District of Columbia and the Bankruptcy Court of the District of Columbia, whose bank of judges have obstructed our ability to bring the state of Ohio to bankruptcy for the crimes against minors, our children, Clayton Michael Bates and Mara Marie Roll, stating that no one can approach the bankruptcy court of the District of Columbia except as a bankrupt. So in that statement, in that judgment by the bank of judges, I use that term very loosely, as they're mere administrators in the Article 3 private bar union rules. They're just bar union rules, really, as a monopoly of the judiciary, of the Article 3 judiciary throughout the United States, being oppressed upon the territories of the United States of America. So in that bank of judges of the Article 3 bar union monopoly declared that even children as offspring cannot bring claims against the corporate subsidiaries of the United States. They basically proved that they are enjoining children in contract, which is a prima facie treasury crime and a prima facie fraud in the law of equity. in the law of equity, you may not contract with children. It's considered not only a prima facie willful fraud, it's considered a fraud that's void nunc pro tunc initiated from its inception. So on the record, you have an admission by the bar union monopoly of the Article III courts that they are engaging children in contract. And that is, a prima facie equity fraud. And remembering that the states of X are Uniform Commercial Code instruments under Section 910277, and they are mere subsidiaries of the United States as a corporate charter, which is a corporate charter that lays in the 10 by 10 square mile area called the District of Columbia, which is a post-Reconstruction creation of statute, again, created by the coup of the bar unions, which are foreign patent holders. And the United States is defined as a federal corporation in Title 28, 3002, Section 3002, Subsection 15. So you basically now have proof that you are being run by a fascist dictatorial monopoly of the bar union, and that they are barring the American people from bringing claims against their constructs by mere opinion in violation of laws of equity, even when children are the victims of their fascist crimes and treason and sedition. And so that's basically why they came after me, is because I have defaulted their treasury, and that default went into effect under statute by the willful failure of the Department of Transportation to answer our claims in 2020-40. We actually filed it in the Court of Bankruptcy, and the clerkship refused to file in bankruptcy and instead filed it in the District of Columbia District Court, which is part of the shared clerkship. They have a shared clerkship. So the bankruptcy court was basically born out of the District Court of the District of Columbia. And mind you, the District Court of the District of Columbia, prior to Reconstruction, was the Supreme Court of the District of Columbia. So the District Court of the District of Columbia is a statutory morphing of the Supreme Court of the District of Columbia by, again, post-Reconstruction statutes. So when we bought it in that way and they blocked it, they basically voided their charter, is what they basically did in equity. And at least through the administrative courts, they've proven the administrative courts are blocking claims by children for crimes against them through their corporate structure. Again, clear fascism. So that case went into default. The default became effective July 6th because we filed on January 6th by statute. By the way, we filed it, the Department of Transportation had 6 months to answer, which they failed to answer. And so it's a statutory default on the claim. So we won the claim in equity. Well, after July 6th is when they came after me with these false evictions. And speaking of that, there's a public record of that where people can get the prima facie treason in that case. They brought the false eviction, fraudulent eviction, I believe in, say, May. Yeah. And in that case, I filed a demur and a counter and cross claim. Well, the administrator of that case at the time was Mr. Ted Barrows, B-A-R-R-O-W-S. These documents can be found in Supreme Court case 20-760. So in the Ohio Supreme Court case 20-760, anyone can go look at the 626-2020 document, which is where we did a notice of removal in that case, and then joined it to the 2020-40 case, because we already had the state of Ohio in default at that time. And the state of Ohio had no capacity to bring any claims against Monica G. Justice or any of Mike Instrumentality or me or any of the companies that I own and possess solely. And so we laid the demur in. Well, in the filing on 2026-2020, it's titled Notice of Removal, I believe, by 1605C, and then it's also the second title is Notice to Adverse Parties, and that's how you'll know you have the right one. It's 626-2020. Well, if you look at Exhibit D in that, which is a list of three judgment entries, Those three judgment entries are prima facie treason. And so Exhibit D in the document from 6-26-2020 in case with the Ohio Supreme Court 20-760 are prima facie treason upon their face that anyone can pull off. And in those three judgment entries, they admit to the fact that I, see my company, which is legally registered in the state of Ohio and has been legally registered and in good standing since 1998, and I also have a federal trademark. So I'm a federally registered company in that regard called Attention to Detail. The Attention to Detail holds a material lien, which is Exhibit A in that case, holds a material lien on this resident address. And it also had paid a corporation, which is not found to be legally registered and in good standing. With I couldn't even get an EIN number through the records and demands of the court for a company called D&M Property. Now, call it my vacancy. I had not looked to see if D&M Property was a legally registered company. One would think if you can write a check to them and they're cashing it that they would have to have a lawful EIN. Apparently, somehow they're working around that, but Attention to Detail had paid D&M Property $67,000 over the course of the term of the lease that we've been there, 7 to 8 years. So they tried to evict a Monica G. Justice versus Jim Button, who's considered the limited deed holder. Now, and that limited deed we'll get back to. But these Exhibit D proved that when I laid the demur as the president of Attention to Detail, saying, hey, we're a real party of interest in this action because we've paid this company, D&M Property, $67,000, and we have a mechanics lien on the building, one of the judgment entries states that I cannot represent my own company. As it says that the document fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted, and it is signed by someone referring to themselves as R. Lotus Justice et al., who represents himself to be acting president of Attention to Detail. And they actually say that that I'm not a registered attorney with the Supreme Court of Ohio. So apparently, if you're the president of your own company in the state of Ohio, they think that you can't file law pleadings in cases affecting your company. So he dismissed my company, Attention to Detail, summarily. The date of this filing is June 5th, although it's not. Actually, it says it's filed June 5th, but it's dated 5/19/20. So there's a question of whether they backdated. I don't know how, you know, you have the ruling on 5/19 and dated the 5th of June. But in case, so in the first page of this Exhibit D, they show where he just summarily dismisses a real party of interest that has a mechanics lien as a company that's legally registered and has a federal trademark that has a vestment and a mechanics lien in this tenancy. Then in the second judgment entry, he basically just says that I can't file anything as R. Lotus Justice because I'm not an attorney. Though, and that's dated 6/4 and then filed June 5th. Now, in that regard, we all know that the practice of law is a common right, and that's been as well established in our country for a long time. And then the most important one is the third judgment entry, where he addresses the term demur, the demur that we laid. Again, he says that a document entitled demur has been presented to the clerk of courts for filing. It's signed by someone referring to himself as R. Lotus Justice, not an attorney. And then he goes on to say, in addition, a demur is not a pleading recognized by Ohio Rules of Civil Procedure, Civil Rule E7A, where it talks about pleadings. So they basically don't have the term. It says pleadings, there shall be a complaint and an answer, replying to a counterclaim denominated as such, an answer to a cross-claim third party. So because they basically leave the word demur, which is a statutory right in the state of Ohio, I think it's 47, it's in the pleadings, but it's a statutory right granted by the legislature of the state of Ohio. So what basically why this third one is exceptionally a prima facie act of treason is the bar union in their internal bar union civil procedure rules, which they didn't follow anyway, because according to Rule 4, which is how we moved it to the Supreme Court in 2760, as soon as we removed the case by Rule 4, they had no jurisdiction, and yet they went ahead and executed jurisdiction and went and got this fraudulent, did a whole bunch of acts after that of trespass. So they're citing being able to rely upon this Ohio Rules of Civil Procedure, which again are internal bar union rules, which they don't follow, and think that by their internal bar union Article 3, quote, judiciary rules, they can undermine and deny you a legislative right. So right there in that third document, as Exhibit D, as filed on 626 in the Ohio Supreme Court case 2760, you have a prima facie document of treason. And remembering, treason has to be proven by either documents upon the record, prima facie in Cookett, meaning by stamp and seal, and or by witness of two. And all you need to effect treason is you have to have two or more persons. In this case, there's more than a couple people. There's several people enjoined. There's the clerk of the court, and there's several judges. It looks as though there's also the Supreme Court of Ohio is now also enjoined. And there's some interesting aspects of how when this was moved to the Supreme Court, that the people who reported to defend the actions of the lower court and also Mr. Jim Budden and his illegally registered company was only three people. The Attorney General for the state of Ohio reported, the county prosecutor reported, and the city prosecutor reported. So Jim Budden's attorney, who brought the eviction, did not report. So now you have the state of Ohio defending Cookett prima acts of treason and sedition upon the record in the municipal court with this Exhibit D. So in order to have treason, again, you have to have two or more people and who use threat, duress, or coercion, force. But the force is really immaterial. It has to be just a threat of force. Well, when they come onto your property four times without warrant and without due process of law and no lawful foundations to do it because you've used their rules to supposedly shut down the process, and they're without jurisdiction according to their rules that they apply and whenever they feel like it, that is what when it cured treason. And the fourth incursion where they came onto the property with no warrant, after having gone to a probate court to circumvent what was actually sitting upon the Supreme Court case 760 and defaming my person, and in that, that was a hidden document. That's actually, I believe, should be able to be downloaded in the Common Pleas Court case, which I'm sorry, but I do not have that case number right now. But you can find it in the habeas case with the 1017, the 20-1.
You have 1 minute remaining.
So I'll call everybody back and see if he's ready to ask questions. But they went and circumvented their own rules with a false probate that they fraudulently acquired, where they even mentioned that I charged him with treason, saying that I'm a paranoid schizophrenic. And that's what, but on that, it clearly states that this is not an arrest warrant. So they came into the house with a no-knock raid under the color of law and basically affected a writ of marquee or attempted to and tried to kill me because I have them over the barrel with crimes and they're already in default. So that's where we are now, folks. You have the state of Ohio already in default, going out of their way to try to kill someone who's proven them to be in default, having affected crimes against children, and now they've affected crimes against the whole United States, warring against us. And that's where we are in law right now. So these are all on the record, folks. This is your government warring against you openly. And no one has reported in the federal instrument yet. Not one.
Thank you for using GTL.